Do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle. It is to be broadcast on December 6th, 2023. Episode 374, Fran. How about that?
Right on.
Pretty cool, huh? Okay, welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Yeah, there she is. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment right down here below. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment down here below. Or if you're listening on audio file, you can just send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one. @gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. And rumor has it that my Bicycle Talk files are almost completely up to date now, too. So that's good if you have been listening on iTunes or Spotify. Cool stuff. Ron's rant of the week. you know, it always goes back to cars and trucks. I don't know why, but it just seems to go there. Distractive driving statistics and facts in 2023. Nine people die every day from distracted driving. Total of 9 people every day in the United States from distracted driving. If you ride your bike, please be careful out there. They're just not paying attention. I don't know. I don't know how to stop this. I would love to unplug all the cell phones, but you know, this started out with a discussion that I was having this morning in my spin class, and someone said, "So, is there any way of separating out how many people have been hit by, you know, pedestrians and cyclists have been hit by cars because people are driving with their cell phones?" And I went, that's a good one. I would love to know that for a fact. So, law enforcement officers out there, when you are doing a general traffic stop because someone has been hit and or, you know, worse yet, I think that the number one thing that should be investigated is, were they on the phone at the time? I don't know if they do that as a general procedure. Sure would be nice. Sure would be nice to know. And not that it's going to make us any safer out there, but boy, if it becomes like a finable charge, then maybe that would wake people up, although people don't seem to care. They just, unless they get put in jail, they don't seem to care. They'll just pay the fine, call the lawyer, whatever they have to do. But anyway, that's my rant of the week. I'll leave it alone for now, but I will come back to it later, of course. And on a positive side, there was a ribbon cutting on the East Coast Greenway's newest official section connecting Simsbury to Bloomfield, Connecticut. Pretty cool, huh? So that's yet another addition to the East Coast Greenway Trail, and that happened actually on November 18th. But I had forgotten to mention it then, so I figured I would mention it now. So here we go, more Greenway Trail, more places to safely ride your bike, more positive things to get people who are new to cycling out and feeling safe when they're out riding their bikes. I love it. I just love all this. It's great. And then another thing on the positive side, have you heard about Colorado's vehicle weight fee? Colorado has a vehicle weight fee that could tame the mega car crisis and protect vulnerable road users. Yay, Colorado. Big thumbs up for Colorado on that one. I think that's wonderful. A bill which is currently moving through the Colorado legislature would for the first time impose a vulnerable road user protection fee on heavy passenger cars, trucks, and SUVs registered in the state, a reflection of research that shows such vehicles are significantly more likely to kill pedestrians and cyclists in a crash. Woohoo! Yay, Colorado. You know, it's really funny. My sister lived in Colorado for years, and I still have a nephew who lives out there. And for years, it was a very, very, very conservative state. Boy, have things flipped in Colorado. Getting better. Getting better, Colorado. Nice to see. Yeah, they kind of went from red to purple, and now they're getting a little more, you know, I think what's happened is that people from California are starting to move over to Colorado just because, you know, California's a mess. But that's another story, especially if you're trying to ride your bike. The weather's perfect for it, but, you know, the traffic is insane, absolutely insane. Anyway, let's talk maybe a little bit more about that in the show and the Mechanical Minute and cycling tips. This I thought was kind of cool, and I wanted to pass this on out there because people should know about this, especially if you're a bicycle advocate and you are you're basically trying to do something for your community. And there's Park Tool Company, the Park Tool Company. They make a lot of bicycle tools for the bicycle industry and also for consumer use. They have an open application window. They just opened the application window for a community tool grant program. And I would probably like to talk just a little bit about that today, because this is a really, really good thing. So let me see if I can figure out where I buried that particular... Oh, right here in front of me. This came out of Bicycle Retail and Industry News, one of my favorite journals for keeping in touch with the industry, of which I spent 44 years in. And this is the ninth year that the program has donated over $120,000 worth of tools to deserving organizations throughout the world. For 2024, Park Tool will award grants consisting of bicycle tools and repair stands to 10 nonprofit organizations or community groups. Each of the great grant recipients will receive over $1,600 worth of Park Tool products, including a Park Tool Professional Mechanic Toolkit, two Park Tool PCS 10.3 portable repair stands, five Park Tool shop aprons, and one Park Tool Big Blue Book of Bicycle Repair. Yay, Park Tool! Let's hear it for Park Tool. They get a positive side bonus on the Mechanical Minute on this one, because this is a really, really good thing. You know, they're involved in helping out community organizations. I know of a lot of organizations. Actually, we have one happening right here in the town of Windham. We've got a repair group that gets together and repair everything. And I've been invited in to come join them because bicycles are one of the key items that are on the repair list for people who just need a little bit of help and can't quite afford to go to the LBS and get their bike taken care of there. So, you know, this is a good thing. And then there's other programs, like I take a look at programs like BCCO in Hartford, which has an entire program based around teaching kids, youth, whatever, anybody who's getting involved in cycling, how to work on bicycles, fix bicycles, and they also fix bikes up and send them back into the community too, which is really, really cool. So this is the place to go. Where do you go for the application for the grants? Oh boy, there's a long, long, well, actually it's not terrible, but I will post it on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, but to give you an idea is www.parktool.com/form/community-tool-grant-request. And then the winners will be announced in mid-January. So we're going to have to, somebody's trying to talk to me. I'll have to get back to him. So if you're interested, now is the time to apply. If you've got a nice little program you want to do something with, this would be the way to do it. And everybody wants to talk to Ron today, and I thought I turned that off. Anyway, sorry about that. So Park Tool, big, big thumbs up to Park Tool. And if you've never taken any kind of a repair course. A lot of bike shops in the wintertime, I will throw this out there, a lot of bike shops in the wintertime will be opening courses so that you, the consumer, or the avid cyclist or listener to Bicycle Talk, can approach them about, you know, I want to learn a little bit more about working on my bike so I can become a little more hands-on, and, you know, this is a good thing. And then maybe at some point, when you get to the point where you're getting pretty good at it, you might want to work in your community to help some folks out as far as that goes. Kind of a cool thing. Anyway, let's move on to other items in the show and see what we have here. One of the folks that was just trying to call me was someone who is the head of the Connecticut series of Cross, and I will call him back shortly. If you're listening, Hunter, I'll call you back. The reason that he was calling was probably to give me the wrap-up on what happened with the series, of which our race, Mansfield Hall of Cyclocross, is involved in. And yesterday was the last race of the series. So, sad. A little sad. Okay. Not real sad. We'll get to this later in the show, because this is Cross Nationals Week down in Louisville, Kentucky. And we will talk a little bit more about that as we get deeper into the show. Moving forward, back to my rant about distracted driving statistics in 2023. Ugh, gross. Anyway, it is gross. It's just sad. Yeah, distracted driving happens. It's very, very unfortunate. This comes from Forbes magazine, and it has an entire list of things that are happening, statistics and facts in 2023. It was put together by Christy Bieber, JD, who is a contributor to Forbes magazine. And it goes down the list here. Types of distracted driving. Obviously, if you've ever been in a motorized vehicle and you've had a passenger in your car or whatever, you could be distracted by that. But let's go down the list here of what they have. Visual distractions that cause you to take your eyes away from the road. This can include using a GPS, looking at a billboard, rubbernecking at an accident. That's a biggie. Checking out the scenery, or even looking at other cars surrounding you instead of those directly in your path and adjacent to you. Manual distractions that cause you to remove your hand from the wheel. Behaviors such as eating while driving, using your phone, changing the radio station, or reaching for something in the car are all examples of manual distractions. And cognitive distractions that take your mind off of driving. Singing, talking, daydreaming, or worrying is a distraction. All fall into this category. That's interesting. So the key statistics here is the following driving statistics illustrate how dangerous motorists can be when they take their focus off the road. About 3,000 people die in auto accidents due to distracted driving every year. Each year, approximately 3,000 people lose their lives to car accidents resulting from distracted drivers. Counts between 8 and 9% of all fatal motor vehicle collisions across the United States. Now, why am I bringing this up? I bring this up because we are literally out there, how do I put this, playing in traffic, so to speak, when we ride our bikes. Or if you're a pedestrian, if you're using anything but a motorized vehicle to transport yourself, then you become what is known as a vulnerable user. Vulnerable users are, you know, we're sitting ducks in many ways, unless you are extra cautious. And sometimes even when you're extra cautious, it doesn't pay off, but usually it does. So I am hyper aware when I'm out riding my bike, and been pretty lucky with it over the years. Maybe not lucky, maybe cautious enough to have avoided these things, but it happens. So 3,142 people died because of distracted driving in 2020. Okay. They died in collisions involving distracted driving, included 396 fatalities in which cell phone was being used at the time of the crash. So, look, it does happen sometimes. Maybe once someone dies, they actually take a look and make sure and see if the cell phone was actually on, because it's pretty easy to see. But anyway, many people assume cell phones are the leading cause of distracted driving, but many other behaviors can be equally as dangerous. Of the 31 and 42 people dying from distracted driving does not mean that there were a total of those separate collisions. There were just 2,880 total crashes resulting from driver distraction. The fact is the death toll is higher than the number of the independent collisions. It demonstrates that some collisions cause multiple fatalities. 8% of fatal car accidents are due to distracted driving. That's never a good thing. 9 people die every day from distracted driving. That's what I started out this whole thing with. 587 pedestrians and cyclists were killed by distracted drivers in auto accidents in 2020. Okay. We do not have the stats yet for 2023, but I'm sure we will get them fairly soon. And of course, 324,000 people were injured in car accidents due to distracted driving. And drivers spend an average, I like this. Now, this is where it gets kind of interesting. Drivers spend an average of 1 minute and 38 seconds on their phones per hour of driving. This reflects about a 30% increase in phone use while driving compared to February of 2020. In the last month before the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, drivers may have become more dependent on phones as a source of information and communication during COVID lockdowns, which translates to more phone use while operating a vehicle. Most distracted driving happens, this is very interesting, between 6 and 11 p.m., not a.m., p.m. That means that people, distracted driving is a situation all hours, but for some reason, the distracted driving average minutes per driving is 1 minute and 56 seconds per hour and in the evening. And the least distracted driving happens between 6 and 9 a.m. So, you're a cyclist, okay, and maybe you're commuting, whatever it is. Guess what? Your odds of safely transporting yourself to wherever you're going is during rush hour in the morning of all times, because people are more alert in the morning because they've had their, cup of bicycle coffee. Hello, there you go. They've had their cup of coffee. They're a little more alert. They've had a night's sleep, whatever it may be, but they are certainly much more alert in the morning. So the distracted driving problem is not as apparent in the morning as it is in the evening. I think that's very interesting. And motorists distracted only also during those times, 6 a.m. and 9 a.m., they only average 1 minute and 4 seconds per hour of talking on the phone while driving. So that's nearly half as much as the time for unfocused driving in the evening hours. Interesting, huh? So while there are many causes for driver distraction, cell phones remain a major obstacle to focused driving. The National Safety Traffic Safety Administration reports that phone use is involved in 12% of all car accidents on U.S. roadways. And taking your eyes off the road for 5 seconds at 55 miles an hour, I love this one, is equivalent to traveling the length of a football field without looking. That's kind of amazing, isn't it? So many drivers, they don't realize what happens when they take their eyes off the road for 5 seconds, but that's 100 yards. That's a long ways of travel that you're not really paying attention by taking your eyes off the road for 5 seconds. So, kind of interesting. More than 29,000 people have died since 2012. Fatal driving crashes have dropped since 2016. That's good news. Over 29,000 people have died because of distracted driving since 2012. Let's see, what else did I hear? Since 2016, fatal distracted driving crashes have decreased by 1%. So what do you think that is? I'm very impressed with the fact that more and more motorized vehicles are coming through with pedestrian and cycling awareness built into them. It used to be, and maybe it still is, I'm not 100% sure on this, it used to be a thing that you would actually pay extra for when you purchased a new car, and I think it's becoming more and more the norm to have that that type of detection on the cars as we get into the newer models of cars. I may be wrong on that. You can double check me on it, but I think that that probably helps a whole lot. So here we go. driver age group. Number of fatal crashes involved with distracted driving. 15 to 20 years of age, 321. 20 to 24, 317. 35 to 44, 474. Look at that. 45 to 54, 368. 65 to 74, my kind of people, 192. And 75 plus, 156. So if you're thinking that, you know, it's the older drivers that are having the problem with the distracted driving, think again, because it's not. We're the safest ones on the road. Yeah, it's all true. We old farts, we're much, much safer on the road than the teenagers are. Young drivers may be more connected to technology than their older counterparts. That's probably why. I can't even figure out how to get this VPN thing to work. So what am I to say? We'll talk about that later in the show. 44% of the distracted driving auto accidents include teenager, resulting in teenager fatality of 15 to 19-year-olds. 2.5% of drivers hold their phone to their ear while driving. Fran, what was the last time you held your phone to your ear when you're driving your car?
I don't do that.
Why would you do that? You don't need to do that. Everything's hands-free now. And, you know, I get in my car and my phone connects automatically to my car. So I don't even need to do... And without even plugging it in, it connects automatically to my car. So if somebody calls me, I can just, you know, push a button and answer the phone and never take my eyes off the wheel or off the windshield, which is great. Women are more likely to use the cell phone while driving. Ha ha. Both men and women use cell phones while driving, but women are slightly more likely than men to practice this high-risk behavior. The 3% of female drivers used their phones while operating their vehicles in 2021, compared with 2.2% of their male counterparts. Cell phone usage while driving is down over the last decade. That's debatable. Does anyone live near a college campus? They don't even look where they're going when they're walking. They're in their cell phone. They're buried in the full thing. But anyway, that's just a personal observation. Using touchscreens while driving is up in the last decade. Well, no kidding. That's because almost all of the cell phones are touchscreen phones these days. Not to mention the touchscreen in the car, which I have been ranting about endlessly for the last 6 or 7 years. That's yet another bad design problem, but people use their phone while driving in poor weather conditions. So 2.4% of the drivers using their devices in clear weather, compared to 3% who admit to phone use when the weather conditions are not clear. There could be a few reasons there, but drivers in the South are most likely to use their phone while driving. Really? Drivers in the South are twice as likely to hold their phones to their ears compared with Western drivers. In the South, 3.1% of motorists have held devices to their ears behind the wheel compared to 2.9% in the Midwest, 1.8% in the Northeast, and 1.6% in the West. Maybe that's why I don't use it. I guess we're in the group of safer, not, don't hold your cell phone against your head people while driving our cars. We happen to fall, both those of us up here in the Northeast and those that are out in California. So, interesting. Drivers with passengers under the age of 8 are most likely to use their phone while driving. I don't even want to go there. Distracted driving statistics by state. Oh, God, I'm sure there are. Okay, Mississippi has the lowest rate of fatal car accidents due to distracted driving. It's the safest place for motorists when it comes to distracted driving. Just 10 fatal collisions in the state involved drivers in 2020. And these accounted for only 1.4% of the deadly crashes in the state. Okay, so we have here percent of fatal crashes. New Mexico, number one. Kansas, number two. Louisiana, number three. Wyoming, number four. Really? New Mexico, Wyoming? There's no one that lives there. And yet they had the highest fatalities. Hawaii, number five. New Jersey, number six. That wouldn't surprise me. Washington State, number seven. Illinois, number eight. Virginia, number nine. Kentucky, number 10. Be careful down there in Louisville this weekend, by the way. So New York is number 11. Alaska is number 12. Vermont is number 13. I would find that hard to believe. Idaho, 14. Massachusetts, 15. I'm not going to go all the way down the list here because we don't have that much time. But anyway, that's an interesting thing as to which states are more likely to have distracted driving problems. And some of them don't tend to be in very populated areas at all. Anyway, I will pass on this one. That's enough. We can go forward on that discussion. I just thought it was kind of an interesting statistic to take a look at. Let's see, what else here? I'm going to pass on this. I had another piece here that was 94% of the year's record-setting number of bike deaths occurred on streets without protected bike lanes. Well, DUH on that one, huh? Yeah, I can understand that for sure. This one, though, I thought was kind of fun. And I did talk about this earlier in the show. And that is, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? I know it's here. We've got this really cool thing about the trucks. Oh, yeah, it was back here. Colorado's wheat vehicle weight fee could tame the mega car crisis and protect vulnerable road users. All right, so this came out back a ways. I had shelved this and hadn't gotten around to talking about it, and it was on Streets Blog. And this is a proposal that's happening. A current bill moving through the Colorado legislature would, for the first time, impose a vulnerable road user protection fee on heavy passenger cars, trucks, SUVs. About one-fourth of the U.S. states base their entire vehicle registration process on weight, but Colorado may be the first one to direct a weight-based fee specifically to vulnerable road user protection. Oh boy. You know what this is going to affect? Not only is this going to affect these gigantic trucks that people seem to have, don't understand that one either, but it's going to affect the electric vehicle market because we've got all these EVs out there now, and the EVs they're heavy. They're much heavier than a standard car is because of the batteries. The batteries are heavier. So anyway, that windfall is a lot smaller than it could have been, and that's by design. According to an analysis from the Colorado Public Radio, the graduated fee would charge drivers of cars like the Toyota RAV4 SUV as little as an extra $450 a year, while the behemoth Hummer would pay $29.90 more. That's it. That's not a tax. That's not a fee. That's not a, you know, a serious upcharge to make you think twice about buying a big vehicle. Where's the $1,000 upcharge that I'm looking for? And then, you know, you take that $1,000 and you put it towards building safe places to ride your bike. What do you think? I think we need to take a look at this a little more seriously. You know, Colorado, you had my attention here until I just read these fees. But, you know, I was putting this together this morning. I didn't read completely through the article. So they're addressing this from a data-based perspective, and that's what Senator Lisa Cutter says. In Jefferson County, who is the lead sponsor of this. Data shows us that the higher vehicle weights directly correlate with vulnerable road user deaths. It makes sense to the funding to tie the funding to that. It's not only about disincentivizing the purchase of the vehicle, it's about recognizing that these are the cars that are disproportionately involved in these fatalities. There's a couple of other things here you might want to take a look at. I'll throw it out there because I currently am working part-time with Public Works in my town, and I know that their Public Works costs have gone way up because of these heavy vehicles. The roads are not holding up to the abuse that all these heavy vehicles are putting on them. They require more maintenance over the years. And yet, we're not taxing them for that. We're not penalizing you for driving your heavy vehicle for that reason. Anyway, I'll stop there. So the less populous rural areas where pedestrian death rates are actually higher per mile than they are in the urban centers. That's interesting. The District of Columbia, for instance, has won applause last year when it proposed that CityLab's David Zipper called the nation's most forceful financial disincentive against the biggest, heaviest car models by increasing fees on cars over 6,000 pounds from $155 to $500. Yay, David. Now we're talking. All right, now that makes a lot more sense to me. And it probably should, because the district's whopping weight fee, though, would have to go through a general fund where the advocates would have to fight to have it allocated to road redesigns, and could prevent pedestrian deaths in the first place. Yeah, well, that's exactly where it needs to go. And that is part of implementing a law or a situation like this, is it should go directly to bicycle ped issues. And you know, that to me makes a lot more sense, because it's going to make things a lot safer for those who have decided not to use a motorized vehicle to transport themselves, and maybe more public transportation, etc. So the Colorado law would likely win points with some Vision Zero advocates for its refusal to grant exemptions for electric vehicles, which are typically around 30% heavier than their gas-powered counterparts, making them potentially even more lethal in a crash. Yeah. So there's that EV story right there. There's another really interesting thing on the EV thing. You know, we're pushing to go to all these electric vehicles. They're 30% heavier. How many parking garages do you think were designed to handle that extra weight? That is becoming a problem, by the way. I'm starting to read little snippets here and there about the fact that, you know, the heavy vehicles are causing they're changing the codes for construction of parking garages because they have to be able to handle 30% more weight in them as you start stacking cars up and down in these parking garages. That's kind of interesting, too. But anyway, you know, there is a simple solution to this. You're listening to Bicycle Talk, by the way. You know what the solution is. You know how I feel about this. This is very simple. We just need to make transporting ourselves in a more self-sufficient manner, more inviting for others. So anyway, shout out, good, thumbs up to Colorado, then a thumbs up to the District of Columbia for, paying attention to this sort of thing. They're definitely on the right path. I don't know if it's the path that's really going to work, but we'll see. It's definitely a path in the right direction for sure. Last week I talked about the VPN story because Global Cycling Network has decided to no longer offer a streaming service for watching all the cool European bike races. And for some of us, that was our source, or one of our sources, if you're nerdy enough like me, so you have more than one, and more than one avenue of which to watch your favorite world-class bike race. But anyway, they decided to pull out of the game. I think it's sometime within the next couple of days, I believe. And they're done with streaming live bike racing, which is very unfortunate. But, we're going to find other ways to go. I've got different avenues that I can use. There's different apps you can go to. There's Flow Bikes. There's Pez Cycling. There are other places that are focused more on that. But what I had discovered was if you have a VPN and you have a location that you can dial into with that VPN, which is not based here in the United States, of which there are many of these you can do this with, and I talked about this last week on the show, then you can simply watch the feed from a European site, and therefore you can get all the European bicycle racing feed on your VPN. Now, you're still going to have to pay for the VPN. That's still out there. The fees are, they're all over the place depending on what you're looking at and how much you want to pay for, if you want to buy it yearly, if you want to buy it monthly, whatever it is. But they're basically what it is when you get that, I like to watch Eurosport. I like to watch the European sports networks because you can get great sports that way. And unfortunately, when you click on those, our good folks at the NBC and the Discovery Network, and are they all the same, Fran? I can't even remember if they are. Our good friends who broadcast a lot of the racing over here have locked us out of there because we are dialing in, even if you are doing that, from a US IP address, and you're not allowed to go there. If you have a VPN, though, you can go there because you're not dialing in from a US site. So you have to check carefully. There is some research involved here, and I did tell you that I was going to give you some feedback on this because I went right to one and I downloaded it and I am now connected to a VPN. Do I know how to use it yet? Anyone got a 12-year-old you can send over to my house, please? No, I haven't figured it out yet. I'll keep working on it and I will report back to you and give you more information on this soon. But right now, I still haven't figured out how to use it, which does not surprise me in any way whatsoever. But anyway, I want to watch Eurosport. I want to watch bike racing. I want to listen to Sean Kelly announcing a bike race, because if you haven't done that yet, if you haven't heard Sean Kelly announcing a race, you're kind of missing out on something. Phil Liggett's great. I love Phil Liggett. I loved it even more when he had his partner there and they were just, they were the best. They had the color commentary. They had everything else. And then, what's his name? John Sherwin? Is that what his name was? Can't remember. He passed away, and then Phil lost his partner, and so they now it's Bob Roll, and I love Bob too. Bob, I love you. Love you dearly. I think you're great. I love your color commentary. It's some of the most amusing out there for sure. Bob Roll really tells it like it is. So does Sean Kelly. I just like Sean. And so I now can do that because I can watch on a European site. Therefore, I can bring it in. The other thing I was watching a number of years ago too, not that long ago, is there was another European feed, and of all people on the, and this was, once again, it was on Eurosport, Greg LeMond was broadcasting live on Eurosport, which was really cool because Greg is, he's, First of all, Greg LeMond is, he's one of our heroes in cycling here in the United States because he was one of the first ones to really, you know, crush it over in Europe and really make a name for a U.S. cyclist. Now, I know there were others before him, there were others after him and all, but Greg kind of, he kind of really opened a lot of doors as far as that went. He also was fluent in French and hung out in France a lot, and he had a last name which was translated over in French to the world, Le Monde. So he was kind of an immediate hit with the French people, which is always a difficult thing to do. No offense if you're French. It's just, you know, we know the jokes and all that. But anyway, so he was a really big hit, sort of like Sepp Kuss is with the Spaniards. The people in Spain absolutely love Sepp Kuss. He lives there. He married a Spanish woman. He's, you know, he's really blended into their society really, really well over there. So, you know, there are ways to, you know, not look like a typical American. Not that I'm saying anything here, but we do have sort of a reputation in the world. And anyway, so Greg LeMond is or was a great commentator also. I used to love listening. He had a show that was on once a week. He was really a lot of fun. He was great, good to listen to because he gives you a little bit different perspective. So anyway, that all goes back to having a VPN, and if you have a VPN, then you can, it'll change your IP address and make it seem as if you're in a location that isn't geo-blocked. And geo-blocked is when you click on something and it says, you are unable to watch this feed in your area. That means you're geo-blocked. Something's blocking you in some way. A lot of times it's because you have a US IP address. So there are ways around it. I'm still trying to figure it out because, you know, I just want to watch bike racing. That's all. It's not that big a deal. I just want to watch a sport that I really love. And, you know, no offense to you folks out there that like watching people throw around the ball that isn't round, but I don't care about that one. And I know it's real popular here in the U.S., but I prefer to, you know, I prefer cycling. That's what I like to watch. So anyway, I will let you know as I know more, as I learn more about how to use this VPN, which I now have the ability to use if I could figure it out. And I'll get back to you in future episodes, just so that you know. Okay, next thing on my list here that we need to talk about, we can get back to this one, but we're going to go on to, it's Cyclocross Nationals weekend starts this week, goes on into next weekend. The Nationals are in Louisville, Kentucky. I thought I had found a good course review on it, and I did find one that was done months ago, and it was on YouTube, and I had posted that on the site, but there was nothing set up yet, and there was a guy who was riding around in the park in Louisville where the race is, but he didn't have 100% good description about what's going on. So I thought I found another one, but apparently it was in a different course, and I was reminded of that this morning by my friend Dave. Rusty is down at Nationals right now. He arrived there, I think, yesterday, and he said that the course was not open for him to ride on yet, but he was going to try to go over there and he was going to try to walk the course. So as soon as I get some sort of a visual of the course, some sort of a filming of someone riding around the course. By the way, if you are at Nationals and when the course opens, you're allowed to ride around on it. If you could just put a camera on it for a lap, that'd be super helpful. We would love to see that up here and everywhere, really. If you take a look at, we got people coming in from all over the United States to go race on the Nationals course. And to have that video overview of the course just and a little description really helps out a lot. I know that if you're there to ride and race the course, you will probably do a number of course previews before you race. But It would be interesting to me. There are avenues of which you can go to watch the cyclocross race. There's, I've got a piece here from Drew Dillman, who's got a preview, and I'll get to that in just a minute. Just so you know, most of the final championship races, i.e. junior men and women, then also U23, U23 men and women, and elite men and women. Those are on Saturday and Sunday. And then a lot of the masters races are happening throughout the week. So, and collegiate races also are happening throughout the week. So there is there's lots to watch. And the one place I have found, and I will talk about this, is how to watch USA Cyclocross Nationals. And for 2023 and other things you need to know. So it is looking like it is at Joe Creason Park in Louisville. That's Kentucky, right? Louisville, Kentucky. There's a course map that you can go to. You can find all of this on Flowbikes, FLOBIKES.com. And you can go there. Now, Flowbikes would, of course, like you to buy a subscription to their service, in which case you could do that if you wanted to watch Nationals. And they will begin, like I said, it begins this week, December 4th, and culminates on the 9th and the 10th, which is the championship races on the weekend. If you subscribe to Flowbikes, you can always, subscribe for a month and then cut it back. Yeah, there's options that you have. And then you can watch the Cross Nationals, which would be kind of cool, which is probably what I'm going to have them on in the background on Saturday, but I have to work on Saturday, so that's not really going to work. But Sunday, I will certainly be able to sit in front of my computer and watch them. But it should be interesting. So that's what's coming up. And then otherwise, I don't have any other options for you at this time, unless, and I say unless, USA Cycling is going to broadcast anything live from their site. And certainly something you can look at and see, but they may direct you over to Flowbikes, because Flowbikes wants to get paid for all the camera work they're doing and all the money they've spent to broadcast the Nationals. I don't blame them for that. I can understand that. But anyway, that's what's going on there. And then I had this other piece in here. See if I can find it. And yeah, so when I went to Flowbikes and I clicked on the USA Cycling Nationals, it says, "This event has not started yet. Streaming begins at 8 a.m. on December 9th, 2023. So that's what's going on there. And you will see that will be this Saturday coming up. So they're doing Saturday and Sunday. But I don't know how you could possibly watch the other events, which are where all my friends are, the Masters and other people. There's other people racing there, and I would really love to be watching them too, but this is what we got. So anyway, that's the Nationals. I got, like I said, I saw the preview of the course that I have listed on Facebook, on the Facebook page. Please disregard the one that I put in, because I think I missed on that one. Might have been someone else's course, so I kind of missed on that one. But there's, as soon as I get an update on that, it'll be good. Dave's going to go out and he's going to walk on the course today and kind of give me some feedback, hopefully back through my Facebook account, and we can, I'll post you anything that I have as far as information goes. I have a lot of people that said, "Sorry, Ron, not showing up until Friday or not showing up until Thursday. I'll let you know when I get there." So there are, I do have a number of outlets there that would be, that will be sending me back some information, we hope. So what do we watch at the Nationals? And this is Drew Dillman, who wrote this. Actually, this was written by Jim Rolberg on November 30th. and it talks about racing in Joe Creason Park, and it's the same venue that hosted the national championships in 2018. Hopefully they've recovered from the river issue that happened back then. I don't know if you remember that. There is a, I didn't even see this until right now. There is a course preview video, and there's also a course map tech guide, which is available, and that is on, this is a USA Cycling site. So if you go to USA Cycling and look up national championships, cross national championships, you can get some further information here. I wish I had seen this earlier before I started the show, because I could have kind of given you a little bit of a preview from what I'm observing of it. What I saw from the last time is, well, anyway, let's just talk this. They, on the course map, they showed the barriers appeared to be very close to the pavement, which I think will be a game change. You can hop those, if you can hop those barriers. So, yeah, if you're close to pavement, you're going to be able to get the speed up to be able to hop the barriers. And a lot of people do hop barriers now. And then there are others that have perfected their mounts and dismounts, and they do really well. The race organizers have laid out four course variations to accommodate a range of competitive categories. Except for the red course used by the youngest of the juniors, all courses feature two sets of stairs and a flyover. A key component of the course is a wooded hillside behind the Louisville Park and Recreation Building. The black course used by UCI Fields, Junior 17-18, U23s, and Elite Fields incorporates more trips up and down the hillside before reaching the course's iconic limestone stairs. Dillman believes that the hillside and stair section on the course will play a significant role in the outcome of the races. In 2018, it was so muddy that people were running well before the stairs. If it's dry slightly or slightly muddy, it'll be a test of who can ride versus run, which is faster. After the stairs, you will have to dive down and the hill and back up again. That area will be exciting to watch and to ride. So, of course, you know, if you're traveling to Louisville and you're going to the Nationals Cross, remember that's also a place that you can, there's great attractions there. Churchill Downs, famous for horse racing, Kentucky Derby Museum, the Louisville Slugger Museum and Factory. You know what a Louisville Slugger is, right? Yeah, self-defense, right. Muhammad Ali's Footsteps of Greatness. And if you're a bourbon enthusiast, the Urban Bourbon Experience and the Urban Bourbon Trail happens down in Louisville, too. See, that's why I should have gone to Nationals this year. Jeez. Anyway, the best competitions to watch, U.S. Cyclocross is set. There's many to watch here. On the elite men's side, athletes that stand out are Curtis White, Eric Bruner, Andrew Strohmeyer, and Gage Hecht. Every day, you know, everybody's a fan of Curtis White. He's done really well with this in the past, but Eric Bruner is definitely, he's due to win a championship here. So, hey, we never know, but Gage Height also could be also in there. So it could be very, very interesting. In the elite women's field, Clara Hostinger's back. Yeah, Clara is the favorite, hands down. She's won over the past 2 years. Raylan Nuss and Katie Klaus both are hungry to win two, and Lauren Zoriner won the U23 Pan American Championship, so she might be a favorite to win the U23 Championship. They and Hostinger, Klaus, and Noose finished second, third, and fourth, respectively, there, and the recent Pan American Cyclocross Championship in Missoula, Montana. Let's keep our eyes open on Lizzie, too, because Lizzie's riding really well right now, and we, you know, she's our local favorite. We love Lizzie Gonzalez. She's you know, she's going to be down there too, I'm sure. I haven't looked at her Facebook page yet to check in and see how she's doing, but I will send her a note, because she could also send me back information on the course and all that other fun stuff. So yeah, it's Cyclocross Nationals time. Yay, Cyclocross Nationals. We are always excited by that, because of course we have hosted now two national championships in Riverside Park, or Riverfront Park in Hartford. A great venue for the Nationals, and hopefully a great future venue for more Nationals. It really is a wonderful place to have a cross race, and it's a big bonus to any city that puts on a Nationals cross race, gets a big financial bonus for doing so, with hotels and restaurants, etc. So what else do I have here? I got a little piece here that came from a podcast, De Rode à l'Alterne, and Wout van Aert had a chat with the podcast, and it was about being in the classics versus being in the Grand Tours. And he says if I would start in the Giro, I would likely go for stage wins. I am realistic. Riding a GC isn't combinable with all the classics, and I don't want to sacrifice the classics. He said, at this point, I'm doing things I love. I love to do all the different things. Riding for top five in a GC doesn't sound that interesting to me. I want to win races. So, little quote there from Wout van Aert. He doesn't want to win the Giro or the Tour de France or the Vuelta Italia. He wants to win the classic races, the monuments, the good, you know, the fun early season stuff. Actually, they go on through the whole year. But anyway, that's what we're looking at there. It looks like I am running out of time, so I'm going to move on. Our local Connecticut series has come to an end. Party's come to an end. I'll have more information about that next weekend. I saw a few announcements out there. Looks like our friend Mr. Rustico, who is down at Nationals right now, did really well in the 60 plus Masters, and congratulations to him and all others who participated in that. So the Connecticut series is over. VPN, I'm still trying to figure it out. Anyone out there, a computer geek, please come by, help me out. Cross Nationals, good luck to all of our New England competitors heading to Louisville. Show them what we are about up here. And, oh, we do love my listener comments, really. Keep them coming. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike and join that revolution of change. Hey, take a day. Park the car or truck. Ride your bicycle instead. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, the management, or the licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. And if you want to listen to past episodes, you can listen to Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedalin' Ron. Keep that rubber side down, wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and whus.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bike.